The following episode of K-Voice was recorded after midnight, November 3rd, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to K-Voice of Resistance, your Happy Pico Democrat, left-wing political podcast for the Resistance. I'm your snowflake host, Kelly. I hope everyone had a nice Halloween. I was going to go as a handmaid from The Handmaid's Tale, but decided I might stand out a little bit at the ball game.
It's time for Dodger baseball!
I was at the World Series in Dodgers Stadium watching my Dodgers beat the Houston Astros in Game 6. And the elation in the stadium was electric. It felt so good to celebrate something. Unlike our current real-world situation we have going on, not so electric was the stadium in Game 7, where we were soundly beat by the Astros the following night. The Astros were really dynamite in Game 7, so I congratulate them for their win. I see this World Series simply as practice for next year's World Series Dodger win. Watch out, guys. I'll tell you what, though. There is nothing like hearing a stadium of 56,000 people boo a racist to warm the cockles of one's heart. If you missed it, an Astros player, Yuli Gurriel, made a racist statement and gesture about one of our Asian players last week, only to get a standing ovation from many Astros fans in their home game. Well, LA was not having any of that. The boos were rapturous. They didn't simply start when he took the field and then die down. Oh no. The entire time that cretin was up to bat, the stadium booed in a rounded chorus of proud dissent, an abject rejection of racism and careless insensitivity. And it wasn't just Game 6. Game 7 was met with the same. I hope this all becomes a learning experience for Gurriel, that his actions matter and actions as a national figure matter more. Then again, he's 33 years old, and if he doesn't know by now... Speaking of racism... Samantha Bee.
We knew when the first indictment dropped that the Trump team would immediately do something frantically racist to distract us from how they pillaged our democracy for some nice rugs. The only surprise was who was doing the racisting this time.
Robert E. Lee was an honorable man. The lack of an ability to compromise led to the Civil War.
Compromise? Like what? Four-sixths the person?
See, this is how we normalize white supremacy.
Here is Ronald Martin of TV One as he thoroughly takes apart this despicable rhetoric on MSNBC.
We did compromise. There was a thing called the United States Constitution. And do you know what that said? If you're black, you're three-fifths of a human. What he should do is go read Lawrence Goldstone's book, Dark Bargain, where it details the compromises made with the South just to get the Constitution passed. Oh, you want to talk compromise? How about the Hayes-Tilden Compromise, which was never written down, called the Great Compromise of 1877, that ended the 12 years of Reconstruction, that ushered in Jim Crow, when they removed the federal troops from the last three remaining Southern capitals. We could talk about compromise, the fact that we had a Civil Rights Act of 1866 and one in 1875, and we didn't get another one until 1957, which was rather weak. How about compromise? We had three Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, 15th Amendment. But you know what? America didn't care about those constitutional amendments because of that 1877 compromise, which led to the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 65 and the Fair Housing Act of 68.
Then he goes into how John Kelly needs a history class and how if he's going to support the South and Robert E. Lee for, quote, fighting for state rights, then he should go support ISIS, because that is what they're doing, putting ideology over country. And on that load of crap about Robert E. Lee being an honorable person...
But maybe General Kelly also didn't read this, which was from Wesley Norris, one of the slaves that he had, where he said that when we ran away, he asked, why did we run away? And we said, because we are free. He ordered us to be beaten, given 50 lashes. And then when one of his overseers wouldn't do it, he said he called Dick Williams, a county constable, who was called in to give us the lashes. And it was Lee who said, lay it on well, an injunction which he did not fail to heed. Not satisfied with simply lacerating our naked flesh, General Lee then ordered the overseer to thoroughly wash our backs with brine, which was done. You call that honorable?
The truth is, in all of this, we knew who Kelly was the whole time. Here is when he was head of the Department of Homeland Security.
Are you, the Department of Homeland Security, considering a new initiative that would separate children from their parents if they tried to enter the United States illegally?
I am considering exactly that.
75% of the people that the great men and women of ICE have taken into custody, 75% are criminals. The other 25% are not the valedictorians of the high school class.
Also remember, according to the New York Times, Kelly said that the appropriate number of refugees to bring in was between 0 and 1. He's just like the rest of racist extremists. And here is Sam V's final comments on the issue.
We cannot keep doing this. We can't keep putting our faith in kind of okay white people. They are not going to save us. They are into it. So when CNN appoints our next moderate conservative savior, turn off your TV and go register 3 people of color to vote. Because if this guy is the adult in the room, we need to start looking for ways to lock that room from the outside. We'll be right back.
If you don't watch Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, I highly recommend it. Her show is fantastic. All right, let's get to the news. Rick, oops, Perry, stuck his ignorant foot in his mouth in Africa and said this.
One of the reasons that electricity is so important to me is not only because I'm not going to have to try to read by the light of a fire and have those fumes literally killing people, but also from the standpoint of sexual assault. When the lights are on, when you have light, it shines the righteousness, if you will, on those types of acts.
Shines the righteousness? Ugh. You know what is more sustainable and can also shine the light of righteousness on communities? Is solar and other forms of renewable energy, you doorknob. But it is more than that. A report by the United Nations states that women are more vulnerable to climate change as they constitute a majority of the world's poor. They are also more dependent on natural resources for their livelihood. Women in places like South Asia and Africa often come from patriarchal setups where their decision-making and economic powers are very low. This reduces their coping capacity in the event of a crisis. Furthermore, in the most rural communities, women are responsible for fetching water and firewood over long distances. With both these resources becoming scarce due to climate change, they now have to walk for longer distances, putting themselves at risk and pulling them away from their families.
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
Taxes are in the news. And look, we know that this Republican economy crashing thank you gift for the multi-billionaires and big business is about as legit as their healthcare plan. But something that is not being talked about that much is it is really bad for jobs and the environment. According to Think Progress, it targets the key renewable energy tax credits that have helped make clean energy a crucial high-wage-paying job-creating sector in the United States. The measure would slash the wind production tax credit by over a third, weaken the solar tax credit, and eliminate the $750,000 credit for the purchase of electric vehicles. The solar and wind credits were part of a major bipartisan deal reached in December in 2015, in which the credits are extended for several years while being reduced and phased out over time. The American Wind Energy Association CEO, Tom Kiernan, said in a statement, quote, "The House proposal would pull the rug out from under 100,000 U.S. wind workers and 500 American factories, including some of the fastest growing jobs in the country," unquote. The devious, malicious malice of these GOPers has no bounds. And speaking of devious, malicious GOPers, let's talk about how Republicans are tiny little men and self-hating women afraid of women having rights and control over their own bodies. And that includes equal access to health screenings, cancer screenings, STD screenings, access to birth control, sexual assault counseling, or anything else. If they had it their way, we would all be wearing red cloaks, wearing bonnets, and serving our role as walking birthing centers. Blessed are those who know their damn place. Or something. So, okay, we have talked about the upcoming bill House Republicans are introducing called H.R. 90, the Heartbeat Protection Act of 2017. Which, under the new legislation, abortion would be banned in situations where the fetal heartbeat is detectable, or a situation where doctors intend to move forward without determining whether the fetus has a detectable heartbeat. It would also be illegal to perform the procedure before informing the expecting parent of the results. 6 weeks. 6 weeks is when the heartbeat is usually detectable. But they know this. Here is Steve King.
We are decades past the time to defend the sanctity of human life. It is important that Congress passes such a strong pro-life bill now because President Trump will hopefully appoint one or two more justices to the Supreme Court, making this a profound moment in the pro-life movement. President Trump is actively changing the makeup of our judicial system with strong conservative nominees who would hear arguments about this bill while it is being challenged on the way to the Supreme Court.
And a certain so-called moderate Republican governor already signed this bill to law in Ohio last year. Kasich. So when the media starts touting Kasich as a voice of reason and a moderate in his probable 2020 run for president, keep this law in mind. Anyhow. These wily Republicans will not stop there. Oh, no. Now that their hopes of taking healthcare away from women died in the flames of their poor, suffering healthcare bill, they are now working on attacking funding through Title X. According to Countable, Title X is the federal family planning program established in 1970 as part of the Public Health Service Act. The program provides comprehensive family planning and related preventable health services, primarily to low-income and uninsured individual at little or no cost, because reasonable Americans believe even the poor deserve to have control over their families and future of their lives. The goal of the program is to provide positive birth outcomes and healthy families by offering individuals the ability to choose the number and spacing of their children, everything from contraception to cancer screenings to testing and treatment of STDs, as well as pregnancy counseling are provided through the program. According to the 2016 Title X Annual Report, the program provides funding to almost 4,000 sites in 50 states. In 2016, the federal government provided $286.5 million to family planning and related services through the program. Saint Reagan, our previous president, who also suffered from Alzheimer's, like our current one, restricted the program in the 1980s. Of course he did. He enacted rules that barred participating providers from referring patients to abortion providers, counseling patients that abortion was available or sharing finances or a physical location with a provider of abortions. Luckily, voice of reason, President Bill Clinton rescinded that rule in 1993. Anti-choice Nazis have taken issue with Title X funding in recent years because they believe that providing funding money to providers who offer abortions, even if federal money never directly pays for abortion services, indirectly enables abortions to continue. One of those advocates, Teresa Manning, now administers Title X as deputy undersecretary for the Health and Human Services Office of Population Affairs. Manning, another horrific appointment by our napalm president, previously lobbied the National Right to Life, a prominent anti-choice group. The administration also released a HHS strategic plan last month that stated that life begins at contraception, a shift you'll be surprised to hear from the previous administration. So, changes they are looking to make in the program include barring funding to any provider who also provides abortion services, limiting the types of contraception covered, or force a shift and focus from birth control to abstinence. Abstinence. Already, if you remember, in the spring, a rule was enacted to give states a choice to restrict the Title X funding to providers that also provide abortion. But that restriction was not yet universal to the Title X program as a whole. Barring funding to providers who also provide abortion services would prevent any funding from going to the GOP's number one target, Planned Parenthood. You don't own me. I'm not just one of your toys. Check out the Gutmatcher Institute. The Guttmacher Institute is a pro-choice group originally founded by Planned Parenthood and has been raising alarm bells about possible rule changes. Check out their site at guttmacher.org. That's GUTTMACHER.org. They are a great source for studies, news, and facts about women's issues and laws and reproduction, including this study. According to Earthly Mission, the Catholic Church and World Development, the Roman Catholic Church is the largest non-governmental provider of healthcare services in the world. It has around 18,000 clinics, 16,000 homes for the elderly and for those with special needs, and 5,500 hospitals, with 65% of them located in developing countries. So, Catholic Church directives restrict family planning service provisions at Catholic healthcare institutions. And the people who did the study wanted to find out if obstetrics and gynecology clinics that are owned or have business affiliations with Catholic hospitals offer family planning appointments. So universities of Loma Linda, Colorado, and Maryland went to work, and mystery callers phoned 144 clinics nationwide that were found on Catholic hospital websites between December 2014 and February 2016, and requested appointments for birth control, generally copper IUD services, specifically tubal ligation and abortion. The results? Although 95% of clinics would schedule birth control appointments, smaller portions would schedule appointments for copper IUDs at 68%, or tubal ligation only 58%, and only 2% would schedule an abortion. Smaller proportions of Catholic-owned, rather than Catholic-affiliated clinics, would schedule appointments for birth control at 84%, copper IUDs at 4%, and tubal ligation only at 29%. For birth control and copper IUD services, analysis confirmed that tubal ligation appointments were less likely to be offered by Catholic-owned than Catholic-affiliated clinics. They concluded that adherence to church directives is inconsistent with Catholic-associated clinics. Women visiting such clinics who wanted highly effective methods may need to rely on less effective methods or delay their own health care while seeking services elsewhere. Okay. Before I go on, I need to issue an apology and a correction. Last episode, I said that I couldn't find anything besides the fact that they were right-wing Federalists. Too wrong, with two of the judicial nominees confirmed in the Senate this week. Stefanos Tsitsipas and Joan Larson. Well, I looked again and very much found how problematic they are. So, first off, I'm sorry. Second off, holy crap. Let's take Professor Tsitsipas first. The folks at Alliance for Justice have released this report on this wet dream for the right wing, and here's what they found. So, in 2012, colonial-era punishments such as public whippings that inflict pain and humiliation on convicted persons, suggesting that public shaming is not practiced enough today.
What?
This philosophy regarding punishment would be seriously harmful in a federal judge charged with reviewing countless of sentencing decisions that will have enormous and lasting impacts on the lives of real people. Tsitsipas also argues that prisoners could be forcefully conscripted into the military. And also, in an article, Tsitsipas insisted that while over-incarceration is real, it is not reflective of racial disparities in the justice system or society as a whole, as the, quote, liberal narrative maintains. He also argued that the growth in the prison population was, quote, driven mainly by violent and property crime, not drugs, unquote. Tsitsipas also asserts that drug addiction is not a disease, but something addicts can choose to overcome. And then, Tsitsipas signed an open letter criticizing the University of Pennsylvania's adoption of new procedures for investigating and resolving sexual assault complaints on campus. The letter made troubling statements suggesting that victims are part responsible for assaults and advocated for the university to adopt an adjudicative system for these cases that closely mirrors the criminal justice system. The Supreme Court has discouraged schools, which are supposed to provide safe learning environments for all students, from attempting to replace criminal investigations and prosecutions on campus.
What an asshole!
Yeah. And that's not all. While serving as a prosecutor in the Southern District of New York, Bibas used federal prosecutorial law enforcement and court resources to bring charges against a cashier at a veterans hospital cafeteria for allegedly stealing $7. On the morning of the trial, he turned over evidence corroborating the defense that records suggest he may have withheld for some time. The cashier was acquitted and the prosecution faced scorching media criticism. So, as you see, I was quite wrong about that conservative extremist who has no place teaching at a university, let alone being in control of people's lives and the future of this country in a lifetime appointment on the Tenth Circuit. As for Joan Larson, this piece of work, groups including Lambda Legal and the National LGBT Bar Association came out against Larson's nomination. They're among more than two dozen LGBTQ rights groups that sent a letter to the Judiciary Committee warning that Larson's, quote, views on civil rights issues are fundamentally at odds with the notion that LGBT people are entitled to equality, liberty, justice, and dignity under the law. Unquote. They point out that Larson, who was a justice on the Michigan Supreme Court, voted against hearing an by a lesbian mother trying to get partial visitation from her ex-spouse she had lived with before the Supreme Court's ruling on marriage equality. That ruling gave same-sex couples a constitutional right to marital benefits. The LGBTQ groups also cite an article Larson wrote in 2004, in which she disagreed with the foundation of the Supreme Court's decision to strike down Texas's sodomy law in the landmark Lawrence v. Texas case. She wrote that it was, quote, an understatement in the extreme to call the Supreme Court's decision revolutionary, unquote. Asked later to explain her article, and Larson said that she did not recall what specifically she found so remarkable. Not to mention that Donald named Larson as one of his potential Supreme Court nominees last year.
I am putting pro-life justices on the court.
He said at the time that a key litmus test for his picks was their support for overturning Roe v. Wade. Larson will now be a judge on the court one level below the Supreme Court. So these are two horrible people who will affect people's lives and the direction of our country for decades. I was a fool to assume otherwise. And the horror show doesn't stop there, folks. Oh no. Also confirmed this week is Allison Eid to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Tenth Circuit. I'll let Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, tell you about this gem. Quote, for the third time this week, the rubber-stamp Republican Senate confirmed another one of President Trump's extreme judicial nominees. Justice Eid has a record of conservative extremism. She has consistently rejected civil rights and public interest claims as a dissenting member on the Colorado Supreme Court. It's no wonder she was included in the list of President Trump's 21 court candidates assembled last year by the ultra-conservative Federalist Society and Heritage Foundation. Justice Eid and the other judges confirmed this week will set back the progress our nation has made on civil and human rights. And they are a central part of President Trump's effort to advance his extremist agenda in the federal courts. Unquote. So, there you go. Is it too soon to move out of the country and give up on the U.S. yet? Let's move on. Let's talk about something completely different. I am not a fan of beauty pageants. They absolutely objectify women, promote impossible standards of beauty, are sexist, and in a big way are everything that is wrong with gender norms in this world. And I was totally in one when I was a teenager. It shocked everyone I knew, but I really wanted the $500 college scholarship. I mean, for reals, it wasn't just a line. My platform was gun control, which didn't go over well with the judges. So Peru just had their pageant, and 23 aspiring beauty queens were hoping to get through November's Miss Universe competition in Las Vegas. And in the opening segment of Sunday night's televised Miss Peru contest, viewers got a lot more than they bargained for. The contestants were to go up and give their measurements, their bust, waist, and hip size.
Seriously. How is this still a thing?
Which is disgusting in and of itself, but things went a bit differently.
Muy buenas noches al Perú entero.
The first contestant said, quote, "My name is Camila Canikova, and I represent the Department of Lima. My measurements are 2,202 cases of femicide reported in the last 9 years in my country," unquote. And the second one got up and said, "My name is Karen Cueto, and I represent Lima, and my measurements are 82 femicides and 156 attempted femicides so far this year." And so on. Every contestant, instead of stating the measurements, stated a hard-hitting statistic about violence against women in the South American country. Quote, "Greetings from Almendra Maraquin. I represent Canete, and my measurements are more than 25% of girls and teenagers are abused in their schools," unquote. One contestant said a girl dies every 10 minutes due to sexual exploitation in Peru. Another said that 70% of women in the country are victims of street harassment. And the eventual winner of the competition, Romino Loanzo, said her measurements were 3,114 female victims of trafficking have been registered since 2014.
Mi nombre es Romina Lozano y represento a la provincia constitucional del Callao. Y mis medidas son 3,114 mujeres víctimas de trata registradas hasta el 2014.
During the swimsuit portion of the televised competition, newspaper clippings about femicide killings or faces of battered women were displayed behind the contestants as they spoke. Competition concluded with each woman being asked what laws they would change to combat violence against women. The winner of the Peru pageant said her plan would be to implement a database containing the name of each aggressor, not only for femicides, but for each kind of violence against women. In this way, we can protect ourselves. Unquote. The contest organizer, Jessica Newton, told the AFP news agency, quote, "Unfortunately, there are many women who do not know and think they are isolated cases. I think that the fact that you are young and that you are regional representative at the Queen of Your Department, giving open and real figures about what is happening in our country is alarming," unquote. And the contestants are planning to lead a march to highlight violence against women in Lima in November. According to the Observatory of Citizen Security of the Organization of the American States, Peru ranks as second only to Bolivia with the worst record of violence against women in South America. The Peruvian government says 800 women have been murdered in gender-related violence in the 6 years leading up to 2015. Last year, frustrations over violence against women was at a fever pitch, and tens of thousands of women demonstrated in Lima and other cities, calling on authorities to do more to stop it. This is an amazing act of activism. Bold, creative, important, smart, attention-getting. Think about it. Where in our lives, in our country, can we do something like this? Where can we shock people out of their sleepwalking lives? Where, when, and how can we wake up America? Activism needs to be bold, creative, and smart, and most importantly, be inspiring. How can we move people, especially communities that aren't plugged in and aren't looking for reality and facts, that have no interest in making a difference or seeing America for how it really is? People who tune into pageants, by and large, are not the kind of person who's looking at the systemic problems of the country and contemplating how they can help. How can we infiltrate communities in the same way? Think about it. This is inspiring, and it gives me hope. That's all my time. Thank you for listening. You can find my show on crabdiving.com. That's CRIBDIVING.com, under the K-Voice tab. Or download my show as a podcast, wherever it is you get your podcast. You can also find my show on Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Catch Ryan Pfeiffer and Patrick File for your progressive news 5 days a week on the Crab Diving Podcast. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice, and of course on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Resist!